1 a.m. Eastern Wartime. This is WEAF, New York. The National Broadcasting Company invites you to another radio trip across this nation as it celebrates the end of the war and victory in the war. Throughout the night, through NBC's reporters and its affiliated network stations, we have been bringing you an on-the-spot report of America's reaction to the great news of today. We take you now on another trip from the sidewalks of New York, from the white lights of Broadway to the shores of sunny California, and from New England to the Southwest. Our aim is to give to America a true picture of how this nation felt and acted on this night of the 14th of August and the early morning hours of the 15th of August in this year 1945. Now, for our first on-the-spot report, we switch you to NBC's mobile unit in Times Square and Ben Grauer.
From Times Square, from the heart of the Great White Way, a greeting from the NBC mobile unit as President Truman's announcement of the surrender of Japan is greeted by the sixth hour of continuous demonstration and no visible sign of abatement. The population that has been massed on this triangle right in which we're placed now has decreased a little bit. I'd say there's maybe 10% fewer people, but there's at least as equal amount of fervor and enthusiasm. In fact, in many sections, more so. Several times, the trolley car tracks right alongside of has broken into flame because pranksters have dropped metal wires in. Several times, the ominous and insistent clanging of police and ambulance bells have indicated that there's been a minor casualty. And many, many millions of times have unknown lips been caressed in a fleeting embrace of joy as a salute to the glorious day of victory throughout the world. We're seated, as I say, right in the middle of Broadway, right on the corner of Broadway and Times Square, 43rd Street. And looking up to the north and down to the south, I again see that ocean ever-changing in movement and form of millions, well, literally a million people who've jammed themselves into this funnel, which is the heart of New York and expresses, in a way, the heart of all America and the world in its jubilation tonight. We've been quizzing people galore. We've pranced up and down the street and watched some of the spectacles that were interesting and exciting and special, and even a little enterprising hot dog merchant who had raised the price to 15 cents and seized the opportunity to cash in while the OPA was looking the other way. The little blonde girl with a red popsicle whose lips were smeared by many kisses from anxious youngsters around in the neighborhood. A little group of jumping jivesters who, without any music at all, went on their merry way expressing the elation in their hearts. Streams of people up and down Broadway. I've talked with a number of people here, and we have at this moment a little United Nations group. Besides those hundreds and hundreds of Americans who are here, there are representatives of every one of the United Nations who are expressing their joy in the universal victory tonight. Right alongside me, for instance, is a young man. Where are you from?
I'm from London.
What's your name?
Ralph Bergman.
And how do you happen to be here in the U.S.?
Oh, my father lives over here, and I just came here a short while ago.
How long have you been here?
Oh, I've only been here a few months. I came here just after VE Day. I spent VE Day in London.
Was there excitement there?
Oh, yes, it was just like it. It was really great. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And how about the excitement here?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's the greatest day of my life, and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, Kenny Bergman, a young man here, what's your name?
That's Moses Villamizar from Colombia. I came here only 15 days ago, and I am overwhelmed to see this ocean of people going to and fro in the most exciting of all spectacles I have ever seen. Long live America.
Fine, thank you for my Latin American friend. What impresses you most about what you've seen?
Well, the most I have noticed have been some kisses about half an hour duration of 1 hour. That has been my most impressive thing in New York.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And now this is Ben Grauer on the NBC mobile unit in the midst of the maelstrom that continues unabated in New York's salute to American and United Nations victory. Speaking from the NBC mobile unit in Times Square, we switch our controls now to station WBZ in Boston.
This is Carl DeSues reporting. Boston blew its conservative top at twilight this evening, and the ghosts of Tory-tossing revolutionaries are right now again dancing in the streets in a violently joyful throng which floods its thousands over historic Beacon Hill, across the swan boat haven of the public garden, and through the common where our forefathers, as little long ago as Emerson's time, pastured their cows. It's now the scene of such dynamic revelry as these cloistered parts have rarely seen. Minutes after the great good news was announced, our Chinatown was jumping, and its short, snarled streets are still exploding with firecrackers.
Our reporters tell us Scully Square is still packed with uniforms. The Haymarket and the region around Faneuil Hall, cradle of America's first liberties, is rocking once more with the spirit of liberation. Freedom chimes lustily from the old North Church. Paul Revere, Sam Adams, John Hancock, the great leaders of our historic beginnings, must be whirling in their graves in Old Granary Burying Ground up beyond the slender steepled Park Street Church on Brimstone Corner. The churches have opened their doors throughout the city and many midnight services have been announced. This in contrast to the theater crowds which packed a nearby theater here for the second night premiere of the play Mr. Strauss Goes to Boston, that play which symbolically depicts another day of peace. The great celebration when Boston Brahmins brought Johann Strauss, the Viennese waltz king, here to lead 2,000 musicians in a gigantic jubilee celebration of peace after the war between the states. I'm sure that any historian will tell you that tonight beats all Boston celebrations by a mile. Even the tutu raised when Washington made this hub city of the universe the first major stop in his continental tour shortly after these colonies were forged into a nation. Boston has dropped its conservatism, as at the crack of the many guns you may hear saluting behind our microphone. It may have taken an atomic bomb to accomplish it, but the Bay State tonight can certainly match yell for yell the overwhelming joy and glorious relief being felt in every city in the land. Carl DeSears at WBZ now transfers you to the Boston Globe on Newspaper Row and Streeter Stewart.
This is Streeter Stewart speaking to you from the offices of the Boston Globe in the heart of stolid and staid old Boston, where we've set up the WBZ microphones to report this glorious and epoch-making event. The people of Boston have evidently deserted their ancient and honorable tradition of reserve and have gone as all out for noise, shouting, and hilarious celebration as anyone else in the nation. Not 5 minutes after the news broke that the Japanese had accepted the surrender terms, the people of Boston, who had been awaiting expectantly along with the rest of the world for the news, poured out into the streets and began celebrating without restraint. The focal point of the rejoicing was the Boston Common, but the activity spread like wildfire. People ran into the streets yelling and shouting and making noise with every conceivable contraption they could put their hands to. Ticker tape began to stream from the windows of hotels and business houses. People in the windows cheered, bent out, threw paper, waved, and screamed. One woman ran down the street shouting, "It's all over! It's all over!" Sailors were running about everywhere, celebrating in various ways, but especially by kissing the girls. In less than 10 minutes, there were thousands of people thronging the streets. Never have I seen such a celebration. Thousands of cars appeared as if by magic, with their horns honking and tooting without cease. This din was soon made more intense by the great throaty whistles from the harbor and the Navy Yard. A formation of planes crisscrossed the skies. A fleet of fire trucks went by, led by the ladder truck. In about 3 minutes, the trucks returned, taken over by civilians, and so covered with people that you couldn't even see the trucks themselves. A little Austin car flitted here and there, and someone in it threw out whole packages of lighted firecrackers that banged all over the place. We left the radio studio and went down past the Common, historic old Boston Common, where they say you can take any street and go any way and still get to where you're going by following the narrow streets, which in turn are said to follow the old cow trails. I doubt that in all the history of this birthplace of freedom, from the time Paul Revere made his historic ride down to the present time, has the old North Church and the Bunker Hill Monument and the old King's Chapel seen such a celebration as this. History is being made here tonight. As we came around by the Massachusetts State Capitol building and down toward the Boston Globe offices on famous old Washington Street, we had to crowd through thousands and thousands of people, gone wild, crazy with joy, and insane with pleasure. Already husky and hoarse from cheering, the masses of humanity seemed to have a superhuman vitality as they screamed with a frenzy of pleasure on this glorious day. Man, what a celebration! The noise is deafening and there's no sign of a let-up. So this is Boston. This is New England, where no one ever gets excited. This is Streeter Stewart returning you from the home of the bean and the cod to the NBC newsroom in New York.
Thank you, WBZ, for your colorful description of the VJ Day festivities up there in usually quiet and staid New England. We turn our radio camera on our great Southwest now and focus our attention on station KVOO and the oil capital of the world, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Good morning. This is Leon Goodman in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Less than 50 years of our American history ago, Oklahoma was a wild and woolly west. And this morning, Oklahoma's big-day exuberance is running through to its overtime goal. Here at KVOO in Tulsa,
the microphone put two stories above one of the city's principal thoroughfares to bring you the sound of a wild and woolly VJ Day celebration. Six shooters in all, partner. Or maybe they're firecrackers we've been saving. Listen to the victory celebration in Tulsa, and those auto horns have been honking since 6 o'clock last evening, Tulsa time. So much for an atmosphere at an early hour in the morning, after 6 hours of the same. Let's switch now to Ken Miller in the KVOO News Bureau. Ken has the VJ Day reaction that really counts. A report on how folks feel about the end of the war in America's smaller towns and cities. The communities that add to an America that couldn't be beaten by the Germans or the Japs. What's the reaction, Ken, in the towns with the Indian names, the first American names?
Well, we might say, oh, what a beautiful morning away down here in Oklahoma. And Oklahoma, the home of the vanishing Americans, has confetti in her hair this morning. The state's two principal cities, Tulsa and Oklahoma City, went wild with joy as the triumphal news came over the National Broadcasting Company to give us the first news in Oklahoma of the Japanese surrender. The state's governor, Robert S. Kerr, was out of the state, but Lieutenant Governor James E. Berry of Stillwater, within minutes of the president's declaration, came through with an official proclamation calling for Thanksgiving in this state of the Southwest. Tulsa, the oil capital, went into a state of pandemonium prematurely in the late afternoon Tuesday as word came that the acceptance of the Allied surrender terms was on its way to Washington. It might have been Times Square, or it might have even been State Street in Chicago on a smaller scale. Ticker tape and confetti showered the downtown district ankle deep. One oil company office showered thousands of pages of governmental reports and regulations intact from their binders into the city streets. Tulsa police were out in force, and even when calls came from various sections of the city reporting disturbances, the city's police chief, Roy Hyatt, reported, "Everything is under control, not a single disturbance, just Tulsa enjoying the peace declaration of today." That was Tulsa tonight. Oklahoma City presented the same picture. Streetcars and buses were at a standstill for more than 5 hours as throngs made the lives of motormen weary as they attempted to keep schedules. Downtown hotels and nightclubs were turned into hubbubs of noise and cheering as the wild crowds, waving banners and flags and wearing hats of every description, paraded from one resort to another. All over the state, the reaction was much the same. Down in Sallisaw, Oklahoma, Wheeler Mayo, the editor of the newspaper there, reported that the capital of the Cookson Hills District, brought into the headlines by the infamous Pretty Boy Floyd, reported his city was a bedlam of celebration. "We shouted to the high heavens with joy that the war was over, but we didn't forget to maintain our equilibrium long enough to give thanks. I never walked down the streets of our town of Sallisaw before and saw our citizens crying." Tahlequah, Oklahoma, over in the heart of the Ozarks, and only 15 miles from Camp Gruber, one of the nation's outstanding Army training camps, there the reaction was much the same. Harold Rocket, our news correspondent, reported, "Tahlequah threw a celebration such as we never saw before. It was tremendous, and it's still going on. Nearly every one of our 4,000 citizens turned out and staged a celebration which will go down in the history of Tahlequah." A newspaper editor and a congressman from eastern Oklahoma, the Honorable Paul Stewart, said, "This is a great moment. For the first time since the tragic tornado which wiped out more than half of our city just a few months ago, smiles and expressions of thankfulness spread over the faces of our citizens. Personally, I'm grateful, and I intend to go to Washington within the next few days to start work on reconverting our nation to a peacetime living." That was the statement of Congressman Paul Stewart of Oklahoma. John Buford, another news correspondent, Shakota, Oklahoma, real Indian settlement, said, "It has been a great day. Our entire town went wild with joy. I don't know when it will end. I've never seen anything like it." And then there was the home of Will Rogers, the nation's revered philosopher, Claremore, Oklahoma. Harry Cates, the editor of the newspaper in which Will Rogers once spent his spare moments, said, "It has been a tremendous ovation for our victorious nation." And W.E. Sunday, the closest friend of the late Will Rogers, said, "I wish Will could be here tonight. That is the only thing missing." Then there was the capital of the Osage Nation, the home of the world's richest Indian tribe, Pawhuska, Oklahoma. They didn't forget the bronzed Indian heroes of tonight, as that town went wild with joy. But with all the joy, the Osage Indians didn't forget to give their thanks. Chief Fred Lookout, the principal chief of the Osages, had only this to say: I give great thanks to our great white father tonight that we have been victorious and that this is the end of the great conflict. And now we are returning you to the NBC newsroom in New York.